Airbnb, short-term rentals, VRBO. Is that one of them?
NO.
NO?
I don't know.
VRBO, Airbnb, are they any good for real estate investors? That's today's show. Let's dive into it. Hey, everyone. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate show, where we help you build financial intelligence and help you build financial freedom with buy and hold real estate. You know, Natalie and I have been investing in real estate for a number of years. We've done thousands of deals now, and we've seen a lot. It's like that
amazing
farmer's.
Amazing, because we're so young.
It's like that farmer's commercial. We've seen a lot.
I know. How do we get that done?
I don't know.
At this young age of ours.
Right. We're not that young. I saw recently online someone saying, hey, welcome to the 30 under 30. And it was like, if you've worked so hard in your 20s that you've made it to the 30 under 30s list, congratulations. I'm like, I'm in my 40s and then I feel a little older. But hey, we have done short-term rentals in the investing in real estate game.
We have.
We know a thing or two about it. We know some of the big pitfalls to watch out for. And first of all, we're just going to talk about what they are, the short-term rental game. You could also call them vacation rentals. And then we'll give you our pros and cons list, because Natalie's biting her tongue right now because she has some big cons.
Oh, I got some stories.
Yeah, we got some stories. So first of all, short-term rentals, right? The idea of a short-term rental is attractive for a lot of people who think that you're going to get higher income because you're turning it over for a week. You know, beach rentals, mm-hmm. people are moving in and out and shaking and baking, and you're getting in with the cleaning crew, and then you're putting a new tenant in there right away for the next week.
Right.
It's attractive, right? And you can make a lot of money if you do it correctly, and you actually have an area where it can, where you can actually attract a lot of tenants on a regular basis, right?
Right. I think that the best way to make money in this type of real estate investment is inherit a property. Right. I mean, that's really it. Like, we've really looked into buying into these vacation towns, and every single time Clayton tries to get me to do it, I'm a hard no on this. So either you find off-market deals, it's just so hard to find like a beautiful beach house for, you know, a discounted price that then you can make money back on. I really think that the only stories that I've heard these really succeeding is inherited properties, like our friend in Rehoboth Beach, who inherited this because her husband's father was a big real estate developer in that town before it was all built out. And they kept this plot of land for themselves, kept one of the condos for their family, and they make a ton of money renting it out, but it's an inherited property that was purchased back in the 60s, the
right.
land.
So it needs a lot of work and it does need upkeep. And of course, you're dealing with the constant turnover. So we'll get in the pros and cons in a second. But just at a high level, if you think about some of the areas where this could be successful, I've certainly heard from experts who've done vacation rentals, and they warn, they always put up like a warning before they start talking about it, because
yeah.
it's a tricky thing. And the reason it's tricky is because you've got to think about the seasonality. You've got to think about the vacancy rate. And if you're dealing with a property in like a Rehoboth Beach, you're going to have a huge swath of time where that house is sitting vacant. In fact, speaking to our friend who runs that property, she said, oh yeah, there'll be periods, you know, through like the holidays up until like March. So she was looking like 3-4 months of vacancy in that property with no one there. You have to then consider, well, who's going to keep the heat on, make sure pipes don't freeze,
right.
other elements
yeah.
about the electricity in the property that you're footing the bill for. Also, in a lot of vacation markets, of course, you're dealing with homeowners associations and stuff. So again, I keep going in the pros and cons list, but let's take a step back. Think about a place like Costa Rica, okay? Here, honestly, is a spot where you could probably make some money if you're savvy enough, having a townhouse in a place like Costa Rica on a street not too far from the beach in somewhat new construction where there are, you own like 2 or 3 or 4 of them in a row. Okay. You own a few of them in a row. You have a service that you trust that can go in and then turn them over with a cleaning crew. You're not paying a homeowners association, and you're also getting the seasonality because it's nice all year round. So that's where you could really make a strong play for a vacation rental or, you know, an Airbnb. But now let's dive into some of the pros and cons more explicitly. Like if we had a list one side or the other.
I mean, that's like very explicit. Like you could make money in Costa Rica if you had a whole infrastructure.
Like, well, that's like, well, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. But let's to be fair, You and I have done a lot in the rental real estate business that we, there's a lot of infrastructure there too. We have insurance on our properties. We have a property management team. We have our tax team. So there is some infrastructure.
Under the right circumstances. Right. But okay. But I have crunched these numbers so hard on all of these types of investments. Number one, the insurance for a rental is very expensive. So we have a cabin up in the Pennsylvania mountains that we rented out on Airbnb for a short amount of time. And there's a reason there's a short amount of time, and we're going to tell you. So the going rate, we actually thought, well, wow, that's great. People are willing to pay up to $300 a night for this ski cabin because it's in a desirable area. That's why we wanted it, right? And so we thought, oh, we're going to make a lot of money. We'll pay our mortgage on this and it's going to be wonderful. Well, I called my insurance agent and she said, okay, but here's your insurance bill now if you're putting tenants in it. I was like, what? Okay, that's a lot, but we probably still could make that money back. And then you go into the expenses of making sure a cleaning crew comes after every single turnover. So every time that person leaves, and then you come down to the expenses of like keeping certain things in the house, like olive oil, butter, spices. People don't like to bring that stuff themselves.
That's a good point.
They're fine with bringing like bacon and wine, and people left
and milk.
The cheapest vodka in our house. We inherited all kinds of utter crap alcohol.
No, so, you know,
and it's so hard not to judge people by what's left in your fridge. You're like, who eats this? But because this was a space that was like,
I was judging them by the wine.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not the wine, the beer. So I like good beer. You know, I think I like, you know, a good Dogfish pale ale.
We did have like canned,
but there was
Coors Light.
There was like, no, it was like the Bud Light Lime or, you know, stuff like that, which, you know, whatever, you know, to each their own. But
someone's going to be really offended that we said that about their beer of choice, but I'm sorry.
No, it's like when someone served, remember we were at our brother-in-law's place and he's like, would you like a beer? And I'm like, what do you have? He's like, oh, I've got Coors Light. And I said, yes, I said I would like a beer, not that, which is not real beer. Anyway, your point
this
is...
This episode brought to you by Coors Light.
Right.
Tap the Rockies.
So, no, in this house, you have to really think. I didn't think about that. That's a great point. But the things you have, you're furnishing the house, okay? So you've got to have, you know, you've got to have the bed. You've got to have the sleeper couch. You've got to have the bookshelf that looks nice. And then you also have to think about like, okay, is this a place that I'm ever going to use? And there's a lot of considerations here. So we have a lot of people that watch this show and who write to us and say to, you know, well, I have this house. It's like a vacation house. We're thinking about Airbnb-ing it or renting it out. And you've got to start thinking about, okay, I've got to now get a closet with a key, unlock, and put things away in that closet that I don't want other people to have access
right.
to, right? Some private things, whatever, your house documents or whatever. That's going to be behind closed doors that people can't get into. You're going to have, you know, spices, flatware. You're going to have dishes, glasses, wine glasses, bottle openers. You're going to have to make sure the house is furnished
right.
and appealing.
And then when you're out of like the olive oil and you live 2 hours away, well, I'm not going to drive up there just to give somebody olive oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff's annoying. Toilet paper, you have to have at least a little bit for them to show up with and then like prepare them. There's also, it took a lot of time to correspond with people and I did not like that. I prefer having.
What do you mean? So back and forth on the like Airbnb service.
Yeah.
Right.
So someone would ask, "Does this have a high chair?" You know, and I'm like, "It says it has a high chair." Okay, but you know, is there an infant adapter? And then, oh, how close are we to the ski resort? And where can I get ski rental? Like, you have to be a concierge. I am not the kind of person that likes that.
Right.
I don't want to do that.
Now I come back to the infrastructure point.
Right.
So let's go back to my Costa Rica example. So if you've got four townhouses that you bought for a song in Costa Rica on a nice little street near the beach, and you've got a team in place that handles these questions,
right.
that answers these questions on Airbnb, answers the
olive oil,
ridiculous questions that are right there written up in the description.
Right. We also used an August lock, and then sometimes, like, someone just couldn't figure that out, you know? So that's where you give access to someone's phone, and then it unlocks. And Sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't. So then you get a call late at night when someone shows up late. Also in the cabin, we had to have snow removal done. All of this stuff was just, it was a lot.
So we were thinking about, because during this, the winter, okay, well, is Dan the snowplow guy going to be there before the next tenants arrive?
Right. You know,
and is Carol, the cleaning crew, and her cleaning crew going to be there between and making sure that she can get down the driveway? So there's a lot to consider with this, and not to mention the damage to the property. So we had curtains ripped off the wall, like the studs were attached to the wall, got ripped out.
They broke the couch.
Uh-huh. They did some other things. And Natalie's favorite of all time,
the picnic table, was somehow collapsed in the middle. Like, how do you even do that? Did they jump off the deck into the picnic table? Or I'm not sure. And then there was another one, which I actually posted on Twitter and @replied Airbnb because I'm not going to say I'm offended by it.
So I went up to the printer.
No. You were not even there. I thought it was you. And I texted you and I said, did you do this? So I was just like doing some work in the office. And then I printed something on a paper page that was like 10 sheets down, you know, not at the top of the printer stack. And someone had dick picked. Like they just, it wasn't, thankfully they didn't take a picture of their own junk and print it. That would have been worse. They hand drew it with some like really fun little cartoon bubbles coming out of said phallus. Yeah. So I was wondering, Clayton, did you do this? And I texted it to him because you were at work. And he was like, no, I did not. And so I had no way of knowing which tenant had done this because we had already had like 6 or 7 vacation rentals in that season. So there was no way to know who did this. And I'm going to be honest with you, the cleaning lady, when we told her we're going to start turning this over on Airbnb, she's like, rent only to families, only older people above 25 with kids. Don't rent, you know, to young people. Well, obviously, that's illegal. They're protected, like age is a protected class. You can't do it. But I see now why she said that, because we had to replace all of this furniture and all of this damage to our house, not to mention get rid of gross junk groceries that I did not want in my house.
And Bud Light Lime.
And pay the extra insurance on top of it. So in the end, when I ran the numbers, we actually didn't make money. And this is on a house that we got years ago. Our mortgage is very low. It should be easy to cover that mortgage, but it wasn't.
How would you like to be able to buy rental real estate with 0% interest? Yes, it can actually happen. And I'm going to tell you how. It's totally amazing, but it actually works. So our partners at Fund & Grow have managed to do this for our clients. They've actually helped raise over $25 million for our clients to buy rental real estate. I'm going to tell you how you can get $500 off the sign-up fee. You're going to save $500 off your sign-up fee. That's amazing. Just by visiting our website, go to the funding tab on our website, morrisinvest.com/funding. That's M-O-R-R-I-S, my last name, morrisinvest.com/funding. And you'll save $500 off your sign-up fee. So how does this work? All right. So what Fund & Grow has done here, they're magicians. What they'll do is they'll set up business credit cards for you. You might get 4, 5, 6 different credit cards tied to an LLC or a business that they create. They do it all for free. They'll set up the LLC for free. You don't have to worry about that part. You just sign up with them and they'll take care of the rest. And then they'll get you multiple credit cards in that business at 0% interest, because most of these cards have a 0% interest for the first 18 months or a year. Okay. So then you'll pull that money together. So some of our clients will get $70,000, others $110,000. My wife and I, because we did it jointly, got $175,000 to work with that let us buy 3 or 4 rental properties with that money. And then after they're renovated and they're cash flowing with the tenant, you just rinse and repeat. You refinance, pull that money out, and then you pay off the cards. And then Fund & Grow helps you do it all over again. So if you want to do it next year, you can rinse and repeat over and over again. And the best part is they're only going to charge you this money if they get you the money. So when you sign up and you save that $500 off and you go through the process, if they can't get you the money for some odd reason, then you don't pay for it. It's that simple.
And they do an amazing job of making everything so smooth. So we just had two clients last week that closed on two different properties, totally unrelated human beings. They don't know each other. And they bought properties using the fund and grow process. And they were closed, super simple. Everything was handled properly. The title company, super smooth sailing. And now they own a cash flowing piece of property that is adding to their net worth. And they have 0% interest on the back end on these credit cards. It's amazing. And it works. So to get $500 off, it's the only way you can get it, is to visit our website today at morrisinvest.com/funding. Check them out, talk to them on the phone, and I guarantee you are going to be blown away. Thanks, Fund and Grow.
Now, there are some tax advantages to doing this, though, if you can stomach it. And for us, a lot of times we thought, well, like, this is our private place. This is a place we love. We never intended to make money on it. And to see it kind of violated like this was just too much for us emotionally, and we shut it down.
Right. But if you're buying the place with the purpose of turning it into a vacation rental from the start, you have right. no vested interest in living there yourself.
Or you want to live there part of the year. This is the big point that Tom Wheelwright makes, that Garrett Sutton makes. Invest somewhere that you would like to go every now and again. Then you're going to make money on it, because every time you go is a tax write-off, right? But don't invest somewhere that, like, it's your personal sanctuary and think also it will make money. Those two things just don't go together, and we learned that the hard way.
Yeah, it almost never works. It really almost never works. So think about those things and the damage and the things you have to pay for in order to get the house up and running again. Also, take into account the HOA, okay? This is something people don't think about, the homeowners association. You just think that that's just a sunk cost. It's not. It affects your bottom line. It affects your ROI. And so when I'm talking about someplace like Costa Rica, I'm saying that because they don't have a homeowners association, right? There's not, that doesn't exist. And so when you go into—
How do you know that? They might. These condos might have—
No, they don't. I'm telling you. When you go into certain areas like that—
You have never even been to Costa Rica.
In my dreams, I have. I happen to know, based on research, that these areas where you're not dealing with a costly HOA. But, like, think about Florida, for instance, right? You can't get away from homeowners associations in Florida. They are everywhere. They're everywhere, even in single family residences in Florida, right? If you're around a lake there, you're probably in a homeowners association. All they do is mow the grass, but you're still, that's a sunk cost into your short-term rental. So think about it. Also, be sure to think about how you, like, how much time you plan to spend in that property. Again, are you going to buy a place in Hawaii or Rehoboth Beach where you know every August you're going to be there? That's prime season, right? So now you're losing out on thousands of dollars in rental income during that August window, right? Because you want to hang out with your family there.
Now, in Garrett Sutton's awesome book, Loopholes of Real Estate, he goes through four different scenarios of vacant vacation home ownership that will provide you with various levels of tax advantage. And it has to do with the number of days you and your family are there and the number of hours you spend working on that property. So please don't do this without reading that book. That's an amazing resource. It's a huge chapter. It's near the beginning of the book, because you need to know how much you can take advantage of it and how much it affects you for your taxes.
Right. So there you go. Short-term rentals, for us, not a fan. But like in all forms of real estate investing, yes, you can make money if you know what you're doing and you've spent the time, you've gone through the process, you probably had your trials and errors and tribulations. It's going to happen. It's going to happen more with short-term rentals because you have more tenants.
Now, also, I want to say this because I don't want to just dump on this and say, like, these are all the crappy things.
No, I was about to say one thing. Hold on. Let me finish my thought because—
Okay.
Because— If you, to your point about in, renting to families, okay?
Yeah.
Smart. But also another thing, what we learned from our friends in Rehoboth and other places that have vacation rentals is try to do it for a month at a time. You can do short-term rentals for a month at a time.
Right. You set the minimum number of days on these sites. You can say no two-day rentals. So no one can come for like a romantic weekend or even worse, bachelor party.
Yeah, like a frat party.
Yeah, that's what you do not want. Fraternities are not a protected class. So you are not legally required to rent your place to a fraternity.
Yeah, no frat bros. All right, so what were you going to say? I interrupted you as you were wrapping this up.
I don't even remember now.
Good. So that's going to do it for today's episode on investing in short-term rentals. We are not a fan, but we want you to build financial intelligence. So we hope you will learn from our experiences. We would love to hear your experiences, though, with short-term rentals. So leave a comment in the description. Let us know your thoughts and share this with a friend. If you haven't already picked up our cheat sheet, it's the Freedom Number Cheat Sheet. You can download it for free. It'll help you figure out how many rental properties it would take you to be financially free. We'll see you next time here on The Big Show. Bye, everyone.